Diversity Music Group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and living color. NJ fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm a disease of stress. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree.
Weather's getting to us. Ooh, it's a little chilly out there for the boys in Flushing. It'll be a little chilly out there as well at MetLife for the boys in Green and Life. Hey, it's your boy Joseph Haas. I know usually you're hearing your man and Mary Tillick. Mary Tillick not joining us today, but you know what? He's here in spirit as well. So wishing him the best. Remember, you can always follow him on Twitter at Amiri Tillick. I'm your host today, Joseph Haas. You can follow me on Twitter at Jersey Haas. We're going to talk Jets football. We're going to talk NFL. Ooh, that AFC East, it's going to be a battle. We're going to have the Reverend Ralph Mancini on to join us and talk AFC East. We're also going to have the great, the outstanding Brian Benway on Bigger Bad. Bigger Badder Benway will take that at 9 o'clock. But now, I am ready to talk some Jets football. Now, talking about Jets football, Sheldon Richardson is going to join the team. Is this defense a one-man team? We shall see if one man will impact that defensive line. Hey, they've been doing great with rookie Leonard Williams really stepping up. He doesn't even look like a rookie out there the way he's been performing. I mean, since the middle of the preseason, he's been getting to the quarterback, so I expect there to be a nice rotation. You've seen what Mo Wilkerson can do despite the contract talks. There's not really a lot of discussion about Mo Wilkerson's contract, but I can't wait to get into that and a whole lot more. But the Jets and the Redskins ready to battle. The 3-1 Jets are ready to battle the Redskins. Now, the NFC East in general, I actually can't believe the Giants have gone and actually stamped themselves as the leaders of that division, especially how they played in the first couple of games. But the New York Giants leading the NFC East division, and I just don't see them as being as competitive a division as the AFC East. You see the high-flying New England Patriots like Tom Brady. And imagine if Tom Brady missed the first four games of the season due to Deflategate. That would have been very deflating as he has been tearing it up. So the 4-0 Patriots leading the division. Hey, you got your New York Jets at 3-1, second place in the division. You know, a lot of turmoil going on with the bottom two teams as they flip-flop starters. EJ Manuel looks like he's going to get the start for the Buffalo Bills and Rex Ryan. And then, of course, the head coaching change after the trip back from London for the Miami Dolphins. Coach Philbin's out. You know that we're going to have the Reverend come on and give us a preview of what we should expect from the Dolphins as they go out to Tennessee and face the Titans at 1 o'clock in the 1 o'clock window along with the Jets and Redskins. There's a whole lot of NFL to talk about. Got our first real long look at Michael Vick, a quarterback for the Steelers. We got ourselves a first unbeaten going down already Thursday night. You know, the Thursday night games start the NFL week, and we've already gotten unbeaten go down. So I'm going to get there with our guests as they run through. But back to Sheldon Richardson rejoining the New York Jets, which I think is the biggest news. That also means that, you know, there was no further discipline to Sheldon Richardson after the second off-field incident in the offseason. So, big Richardson's back. I'm expecting more, of course, of a thrust of that perfect swarm defensive line. You're going to expect them to be fresher. They're going to get a good rotation in. I'm in the mood to predict a couple of sacks. They've been really aggressive there. They've been blitzing a lot. You Todd Bowles has been talking about how his defense is aggressive. He loves the way they play, but they also play with discipline. And that's something that I definitely want to talk about here, because the New York Jets have shown a little bit of more discipline. Okay, the penalties, they can get a little out of control. But you're not seeing an undisciplined football team out there. What you're actually seeing is a team that has a plan. You know, there were some times where it looked like the Jets could be world beaters, but there was no plan. You know, I loved Rex Ryan when he was here, as a lot of Jets fans did. We loved the bravado. We loved the fact that the team walked around with the swagger. But sometimes it just seemed like there was no plan. And now when I look at the Jets offense and I watch them kind of go down the field, and it helps to have a number one wide receiver. Okay, I mean, throughout the good periods of Jets football, there's been a dominant wide receiver that you know, the quarterback can drop back and know that when he has to really let it go, he's got himself a guy on the other end there that he can have confidence in making the plays. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, whether he can get that deep ball way out there or not, we've seen him try many a times. He knows that when he puts the ball up, he can count on a guy like a Brandon Marshall to come down with it. Brandon Marshall has shown that he's got that wide receiver ability. He's got a wide catching radius. He turns short to intermediate passes into long plays, and that's what this just wants to be. Someone who's going to be, you know, flipping the football field. Another player that's the football field for the New York Jets and really, really been the catalyst for this offense is Chris Ivory. I mean, the man runs like beast. He went up to London throwing up large numbers as well. I think he's probably still, if he didn't have to come back, he'd probably still be running there. Just an outstanding ball game by Chris Ivory, an outstanding beginning of the season. It's what's been able, or what's allowed Ryan Fitzpatrick really to be able to get off offensively. He's not, like I said, the deep ball thrower. To open the game in London, they opened with a bomb to Brandon Marshall, but you saw what it took Fitzpatrick to throw the ball. He had only basically took the line of scrimmage, just get the ball off. So, you know, a lot of pressure on the New York Jets offense to kind of maintain this even flow, this run pass where it just, I mean, it's really been, you look at a drive and you go, you know what? They're going to score on this drive. They've got a flow going. Ryan's got a couple of completions. Marshall's caught a ball. Ivory's broken a tackle or two. And you just get the feeling that they're just going to march down the football field, have no trouble in the red zone, and score a touchdown. It's not all field goals with the Jets. I mean, they're scoring touchdowns, and that's what's allowing them to win 3 out of 4 games. You know, that Philadelphia Eagles game aside, having Eric Decker out, who's been, you know, a valuable player in this offense. I mean, it's nice having a guy with, you know, number one wide receiver capabilities playing at your number two. And of course, Ivory not being in that Eagles game and possibly that game could have had a different result. So the Jets, 3-1, showing very much the consistency on offense that any fan would want from their team. Trust me, especially a 49er fan who had to watch the 49ers lose to the Giants. But I guess I digress. So what any Jets football fan would want to see is consistency on offense as well as consistency on that defense. Okay, that defense is not just, you know, moving the quarterback off its spot, as I used to, you know, say last season. What the Jets' defensive front line is doing, including the linebackers, making tackles, okay, stopping runners short. I mean, giving the opposition really no choice but to pass. And then you pass into, you know, that vaunted secondary. Safety play by the Jets as well. I'm very impressed by how the defense is playing. I'd want them to, you know, not, it's not all A's. You'd want them to give up less points. But, you know, they impact the game. They're not just out there stopping teams 3 and out like they have been, but they're also causing turnovers. Okay, the ball is bouncing the Jets' way, especially, you know, Darrell Revis. So, I mean, getting Darrell Revis back has got to be, that's just got to be music to every Jets fan's ears. I see the 24s out in the city. It's just a wonderful sight to see, you know, Revis back in green and white. Green and white show here. Joseph Haas keeping you live for a Sunday morning. Hey, my man Amir Tulip not here with us today, but always here in spirit. Make sure you follow him on Twitter @AmiriTulip. You can follow me on Twitter at Jersey Haas. We're talking a little Jets football. And I do want to bring, and I don't know if anybody got a chance to see this. Who didn't see this? Come on, I saw this, like, you know, right as it happened. I enjoy watching Stanford football, but Francis Owusu, Jets wide receiver Chris Owusu's brother, really outstanding. It's got to be the catch of the year, okay? Quarterback trusts back to pass. Well, actually, it's a little bit of a flea flicker type pass. Goes long bomb to the end zone. Somehow, Francis Owusu makes the catch as the defender is literally in his lap, pinning the football to that defender and making an unbelievable catch in the end zone. Goes for a touchdown as Stanford goes on to definitely to the route in that game. But an unbelievable catch by Francis Owusu. Let's hope that Chris Owusu has an outstanding catch or two for the Jets this season. It'd be good to see that. Now, Willie Colon, a game-time decision. This offensive line, I probably haven't given enough credit to because I've already opened up talking about Chris Ivory and haven't given the offensive line the credit that they were due. Last week I gave them a mention, but I really want to get into in-depth with how Ryan has had an opportunity to drop back to pass, and it hasn't been, you know, this onslaught of defenders like we've seen on a Geno Smith or remember on Mark Sanchez having to run for his life, you know, half the time. You've actually seen, so that's what's helped this Jets and their consistency on the offensive side of the ball. They're creating the holes, and Chris Ivy looks like he barely needs one, but they're creating the holes, they're getting that block to the second level, and really giving Ivory a chance downfield, and he's made the most of it, you know, just tearing up the opposition. The Dolphins had no chance. The Dolphins had absolutely no chance, and you could see the team got disenchanted by the second and third quarter as they watched Ivory, you know, just pummeling them, just run after run. He was dragging people. It got to the point where each run was 6 and 7 yards, looking a lot like Leonard Fournette did last night as well. That's a player I want to talk about a little later in the show. If that guy doesn't have Heisman written all over him, I haven't seen a running back just drag people. It takes an entire team to get the guy down behind the line of scrimmage. He just continues to run. He falls forward. A 2-yard gain becomes a 5-yard gain, and 5-yard gains become 9 yards. The guy is just, and then when he gets a little bit of space, that power just translates into speed. Haven't seen a running back like that in a long time. But back to the New York Jets running backs. Both power out of the backfield. Ryan has gotten used to swinging it out there, and that's become a comfortable play for the Jets. You've got to watch out how an attacking defense like the Redskins will try to take advantage of that. Maybe bait Ryan into throwing that pass, going out and jumping that. So try to watch out as they're going to try everything they can to get this win. They're a team that, you know, they've got some internal turmoil as well, not as much as maybe Bills or the Miami Dolphins have, but they're a team that has a little bit of internal strife as well, as their number one draft pick sits on the bench and watches football games. That's a situation where, and I should bring this back to the Buffalo Bills, because Tyrod Taylor with his hamstring is kind of iffy for today, and that's why they're going to see EJ Manuel, or that's what the reports are. So, you know, Tyrod Taylor not really getting into a lot of the practices. So, you know, it's going to be EJ Manuel who's practiced pretty much the whole week. We're going to see how this offense looks with EJ Manuel, who's got a very strong arm. It was just maybe a little iffy with his decision making, but has a very powerful arm. And I want to see what he does with a guy like Sammy Watkins, who's opened his mouth and said, you know, the ball should be coming my way a little bit. And when you've got that kind of talent and the team, you know, has that much interest in them, you know, being a fourth overall pick, you want to take advantage of those targets. So, and, you know, is there a bit of a, I know we're going to talk about Ralph a little bit later in the show, and we're going to, you know, break down the AFC East while doing that. We're definitely going to get into this discussion. But was it wrong of him to speak up and say, I want the football, being a young player and seeing what his team is going through? I don't think so. I think that might be more, yeah, and in the way he said it, might be more of a leadership thing. And if he felt that, you know, maybe he could have kept that in the room and said it to everybody in the room and didn't have to say it, you know, out loud. But maybe by saying it out loud, he got everybody's attention, not just, you know, oh, that's just Sammy griping because he's a diva wide receiver. No, you know, everybody knowing that this is how he feels is now going to be expecting more from him with every target. And with every target, he's going to be judged, and he should also thrive with this pressure. I mean, that's what he's looking for. He's looking to say, hey, look, I'm a great player. I'm a great player. I want to go out there and make great player plays, but I don't start with the football. I need you guys to get me the football. So we'll see how Sammy Watkins does from this point forward in the regular season. I'll be keeping a close eye on him, and if he's out there making plays, all he can say is, I told you so, as that burner will definitely end up in the end zone more than a couple of times this season. An outstanding selection by the Buffalo. So let's see if they can actually put some gas in that Ferrari and watch her go. A couple of guys that we want to watch go here as we enjoy watching Jets football are, like I said before, Brandon Marshall, and gave a courtesy mention, Eric Decker. But it would be nice to see those guys really dominate today. Secondary for the Redskins, I don't find them to be anywhere near the talent level of some of the other secondary that the New York Jets have faced and torched. They were able to really, you know, get good passing off against the Miami Dolphins because they were basically just injured. Suffering injuries during the game also didn't help. But as looking at the Washington Redskins secondary, the Jets should not just be able to go for the one or two long bombs. I want to see consistent attack. I want to see a consistent attack downfield. So this is going to be on the Ryan Fitzpatrick to get the ball 17, 20 yards, get the one-on-ones with Marshall, get him to isolate on his cornerback. Even if he is getting double teamed, then that means you've got to run a tight end route right underneath Brandon Marshall's route, get to the open spots on the football field. The Redskins are also known as a blitzing team. Catch them blitzing. Just watch out for the screens. This looks like, and I don't want to give my prediction away too early, but this looks like a game that the New York Jets should have no trouble in, just like the game against the Miami Dolphins. So they had a bye week. They're rested up. There should be no jet lag from the trip across the pond. I'm seeing, feeling the New York Jets being victorious today, going for one, but the only thing that I think stopped is themselves. They can't turn the ball over. They haven't been a turnover-heavy team most of the season. It's probably a great reception number. Turning the ball over, so I'm not expecting that. But anything can happen in a football game. Trust me. After watching the way Michigan lost a football game last night, I can't reiterate how anything can happen in a football game, anything from a freak play to a freak injury. So you're never really banking on it, but this would easily be a Jets victory, and I don't just mean by 3 or 4 points. I mean the Jets should do kind of like what they did to the Dolphins and really pull away from the Redskins late in the game. I don't even think we're going to see too much of Nick Folk. This is a team that I think is going to come out after the bye week, again maintaining that discipline that's been instilled in them from their head coach, coming out with a game plan, plays they want to execute. I want to see them get, maybe if they line up Bilal Powell in the slot as well. Of course, Jeremy Curley needing to be more involved. And as you saw, the offense clicked a little bit more as Jeremy Curley was reinserted into the offensive lineup as well. We've seen him returning punts. Curley is one of the key cogs to this team. Okay, not very big in stature, but he means a lot to the scorecard. And Ryan Fitzpatrick having the luxury of a guy he knows can catch the football, you know, in the short intermediate in that slot, sort of like how Tom Brady has been utilizing for the last 10 or so years, and just been, you know, dominating by being off the short play. A guy like Jeremy Curley who line up also. Ryan Fitzpatrick, man, you've got yourself some weapons. You've got yourself a Redskins team as your opponent that I believe is very shaky. I don't see them as much of a challenge, so I'm really going to be putting a lot on Ryan's shoulders. I want to execute, and I actually want to see him put up some stats. I want consecutive completions, 5, 6 in a row. I want to see some really There's some really, you know, not just, I'm not looking for like lengthy drives. I'm just looking for drives where he looks like he's in total control. Oh, he gets up under center. He's getting the wide receivers in motion. He's stacked, get right back in position. I just want to see a couple of drives from Ryan Patrick where it doesn't look like, okay, we haven't done this in 2 weeks. I want to see mid-season form out of the guy. I expect big things now from that. That's going to be, I'm not going to be satisfied with just the wild card. Okay, I know it's only been the first four games, but you're judging this team on their first, and I'm going to judge them pretty stringently now because they look really good. By looking at their schedule, they look like they'd be able to win some games. All right, so you've got, all you need to do is win 10 to get in. Okay, there's so few seasons where a team wins 10 games and they don't get in. All right, Jets are already, you know, three on the way in. Okay, and then with this game against the Washington Redskins, which I see is a very easy challenge. I mean, they're basically on their way to having themselves definitely the opposite of last season. That's already within their sights. So it's not. I'm not really going to sit here and you know, want the Jets to win a game, lose a game, win a game, lose a game. They're going to have to show they can win a couple of games in a row. They're going to have to show that they can win on the road, London being an outlier, of course, but they're going to have to show they can win on the road and just basically travel their offense and, of course, pack that outstanding defense. I don't see the Jets stumbling in the next couple of weeks. So if you can just, you know, manage the games against your division rivals. Of course, the New England Patriots, they're going to be the toughest challenge. But if you can go ahead and manage the games against the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins, sweep the Dolphins during this season, the Bills, you know, still a little back and forth. You're playing them late in the year. See if they have their situation settled by then. But a Jets team by then should be well on their way to being a dominant defensive team and a consistent enough offensive team to really contend this season. I mean, I'm looking at teams like the Atlanta Falcons, okay? They've got a nice offense, okay? Their defense is somewhat reliable. But the Atlanta Falcons were a team that we were waiting to see lose. They weren't going to be able to keep that up. And for them to lose against a Saints team that didn't look like they had it together the first few weeks of the season, the Saints really came together on prime time and showed what they were made of. So look at the Falcons with their offense and all those weapons and how well they move up and down the football field. But anything can happen on Sunday, and you see the undefeated Falcons, no longer undefeated as the Saints, were able to clip them on Thursday night football, 31-21. We've got you and getting you ready for a Jets football Sunday here on the Green White Show. Joseph Haas here, Amiri Tilluk, not here today, but here always in spirit. Make sure you follow Amiri Tilluk on Twitter at Amiri Tilluk. You can follow me on Twitter at Jersey Haas. A little bit more about the New York before we swing into the rest of the AFC East. At 3-1 and really settling in to the season, coming off the bye week, night victorious trip to London, actually sending Miami Dolphins franchise into a little bit of a tailspin. And who says they haven't been in a bit of a tailspin already with players looking, you know, Sue looking, he doesn't want, I don't say look, they don't want to play, but it got really dicey in the second and third quarter. It really didn't look like the Dolphins were interested in continuing to play that football game. So with a 3-1 New York Jets team that I say looks well on their way to a 4-1 record, well, where are they going to stack up when they play a team like New England? Now, are they going to be able to compete with Tom Brady, who's throwing up 300 and 400-yard performances and seemingly, as always, using everybody and anybody on the field to catch touchdowns, to move the ball? The Jets, they've got a wide array of talent. I really wish they had a little bit more in the tight end area. Of course, you look across the way at the New England Patriots, and you see what they have in terms of tight end talent with Rob Gronkowski, who is just, you know, still a beast. That boy bad, and you just want to. You just wish, you know, the Jets had that kind of inside presence. Jeff Cumberland doing real good transitioning into that every down kind of tight end role. It's good to have him as your pretty much every down tight end because of his ability to block and block well. That's just one of the main things the Jets are doing right now, blocking well for Ryan Fitzpatrick, for Chris Ivory. They're just after all the ridicule I know I give them during the offseason, it's good to be able to say, you know, if there's a weakness to the New York Jets, it's not the offensive line. Okay, don't go out there and give up like 4 or 5 sacks today, okay, guys? But if there has been something that's been good about the New York Jets, it's been their offensive line, the ability for them to protect for Ryan Fitzpatrick, and the ability for them to blow open some really bad holes for Chris Ivory to get in base. So, like I said, a team that's ready to make that push, a team that's got a stout offensive line. We've already talked about that running game, and I don't expect Chris Ivory to slow down after having a golf. I mean, they ran him into the ground in England, and sure enough, getting him a few days to relax, to rest it up, I foresee him getting 25, 30 touches, and that's just, you know, running from the backfield. Of course, you're going to see him catch one or two out of the backfield as well. So Chris Ivory, of course, going to be pretty predominant in what the Jets do on offense. Another guy who's going to be predominant on what the Jets do on offense, or he should be, Ryan Fitzpatrick should know by now, toss it up in the direction of Mr. Marshall, of Brandon Marshall, and I'm pretty sure you're going to get yourself a good result. His ability to catch the football, like I said, wide catch radius. So good for a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, who sometimes can throw the knuckleball. I mean, his ball isn't the prettiest ball, but he gets it there, and pretty much that's what you're looking for the quarterback to get it there, and you're looking for him to get it on time. So no more behind the wide receiver passes for Ryan Fitzpatrick, especially with a guy like Marshall, who's going to be able to make up sort of difference for the quarterback with, like I said, that wide catch radius. Here's a guy in Eli Manning who knows about having a guy with a wide catch radius in Odell Beckham Jr. So every quarterback's friend is a wide receiver who can snatch the ball that isn't perfectly thrown to him. And then, of course, his ability to make defenders miss. That first defender, that first tackler, that cornerback is not going to get him down. Brandon Marshall, big, strong, a great athlete and just a smart pickup. So GM Mike Maccagnan getting one in his, a feather in his cap with that pickup. Let's do a quick Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout, reset the show, and then get ready to welcome on the Reverend Ralph Mancini here on the Green and White Show. Now, everybody knows they can find me at hcoftheNYJ.com. They can also find me on hostileinterpretations.com. I'll go ahead and spell that for you. That's HAASSTYLE interpretations.com. Now, don't forget, my inbox is your inbox, so holler at me anytime, josephhaasnfl@gmail.com. Also, I'm online for you 24/7. Hit me up on Twitter @JerseyHaas. Like I said before, this is the Green and White Show. Amiri Tillich, usually there. Joseph Haas, here today. Amiri Tillich, out for today, but always here in spirit. Make sure, like I said, you follow him on Twitter @AmiriTillich. Now, back to the Green and White Show with, like I said, Joseph Haas and your boy Amiri Tillich. Out for today, but like I said, here in spirit to wrap up the Jets conversation before we bring in Reverend Ralph. Now, the AFC East is a little funny because all the Buffalo Bills have to do is make a bit of a run and they're right back in the picture. And it's not hard to look and see the Jets lose a game or two and bring a team like the Buffalo Bills back. I don't know if I should count the Miami Dolphins in or out. They've got talent to play, okay? They've got the talent to play, but you're going through the coaching change. Where are their heads at? I'm going to need a couple of weeks of taking a look at them in order to see where head is at as a football team. And once I can gauge that, I can see a little bit of you know, where they're going. As a football team, I expected big things from the Dolphins. Prognosticators expected big things from the Miami Dolphins. So to see them fall where they fell and no one, maybe except for Reverend Ralph, predicted that the head coach would lose his job just a few weeks into the season. Just you just, you know, you put the Dolphins on the back burner, really only concerned with how the Jets can play against the New England Patriots and whether or not, you know, they're able to go ahead and take out the Buffalo Bills, who, again, who are going to start E.J. Manuel this week as opposed to Tyrod Taylor. So E.J. Manuel getting a start. Sammy Watkins looking for some footballs. I know another receiver on the New York Jets who should be looking for some footballs. And because of the presence that a Brandon Marshall commands, definitely should be looking for the football. And look at the big plays. That's Eric Decker scoring a touchdown in England. Eric Decker getting back on the football field. Still a little gimpy. He needed the 2 weeks. So, like, Eric Decker is going to be able to make an appearance, and I'm looking for big things from him as well. I mean, you're looking at a number one wide receiver talent going against the other team's second best defensive back, so you're looking for big things from Eric Decker, a guy who isn't afraid to take it up the middle as well, some good time with painting, so, you know, able to kind of see the play. So it's good to have a guy who as Jan Gelly has called him, the, you know, kind of like a coach on the football field. So Eric Decker, I'm looking for big things from him as well. Somebody else who I'm looking for some big things from, and I mentioned him, you know, not just as a third wide receiver, as a slot guy, but, you know, also in some special teams. I'm looking for some big things from Jeremy Curley. I really enjoy his reintroduction into the lineup after the first couple of weeks, him not getting as much run as I thought he should. Jeremy Curley, I want to see some special teams moves out of him. I'd like to see the start with better field position, and that's what's going to make this game an easy game for the New York Jets. Hey, field position football, that will make this game a very, very easy game for the New York Jets, and as I've already said a couple of times, I see them winning, no doubt. Let's see. Now, without any further ado, let me get on the horn to talk some AFC East and bring the AFC East report. Our man, the Reverend Ralph Mancini. Reverend Ralph, welcome to the show. How's it going, my man?
Hey, how's it going? Flying solo today, hey?
Hey, you know how it is. Solo pilot, but still trying to fly this jet from one end to the other. Our good friend Ralph Mancini joining us with the AFC East Report. The rest report, as we call it, is he's going to go ahead and break down the Patriots, the Buffalo Bills, and that what the hell happened to him, Miami Dolphins. And then we're going to get into some Jets talk for a while. Reverend Ralph joining us a little early on the program. Ralph, appreciate you, man.
Hey, no problem, man. What's going on?
All right. So first up, what do you see out of Miami Dolphins for their first game? New coach. You know, they had a bye week to kind of get things together, but they're at Tennessee, 1 p.m. We'll talk a little AFCs and then bring it back to the Jets. So first up, those Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, those Miami Dolphins, they have a new coach. They have a new mentality. They switched up their practice methods. So there's new hope. There's enthusiasm. The players seem to be excited, but, you know, they have a tough matchup this week versus the Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans, they've shown some improvement on the defensive side of the ball, and, you know, the Miami Dolphins are going to have a new mentality. They're looking to run the ball a little bit more, and so it's going to be interesting what they do up front with that offensive line because they haven't been able to generate anything on the ground in their first four games. And so I think, you know, one of the key things to look at is they're plugging in a new player at right guard. Billy Turner takes over for Jameel Douglas. Brandon
okay.
Albert returns also at left tackle. He was suffering from a strained hamstring. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what that offensive line is going to do with the infusion of two new players into that offensive line to see if they can get Lamar Miller back on track. And I think that's going to be the key today for the Miami Dolphins, you know, if they're looking to get a win. So, you know, I mean, we shall see. On the defensive side of the ball, it looks like they're not going to make a lot of changes in terms of their scheme. It's going to be tough to gauge, you know, whether or not you're going to see any real improvements on the defensive side of the ball. We all know that they do have talent in terms of personnel. Again, I think the big thing with the Dolphins today is that offensive line and their running game. If they can get that going, I think they could win a close game today.
Okay. Now, you don't think the offensive line changes were changes for changes' sake? You feel that these are really going to be constructive changes by the Dolphins and that we're going to see marked improvement in their running game? You're, as you mentioned, get Miller a little bit more involved in the offense, get him going. Do you feel like it was really a constructive change? It wasn't just change for change's sake?
Brandon Albert definitely improves that offensive line. He's a proven guy. They're paying him a lot of money. So mm-hmm. he definitely improves that offensive line. Then at the guard position, Billy Turner is a player who's physical, is a good run blocker, but, you know, he's still a young player, so it remains to be seen, you know, how much improvement he can deliver. But, you know, a lot of times it's just the mentality. You know, you have to run the ball a lot to get that offensive line in rhythm and get the running your feature back in rhythm. And so that's what they weren't doing before. They weren't giving those guys a chance to really, you know, again, get in rhythm. So, you know, if they do it more often, they make a commitment to the running game, I think that alone should improve them.
I see. And like all good football teams, if you're able to run the rock, okay, you're able to dominate the line of scrimmage, then you've won most of the battle there. You're able to, you know, dominate time of possession. You're able to get the football down the football field and get yourself closer to...
And it takes a lot off the shoulders of Ryan Tannehill.
Exactly. Who's also been, you know, he's been criticized. Now, okay, question for you. Ryan Tannehill. I don't have him in, of course. I mean, he's in the bottom 15 of quarterback. How high in the bottom 15? I've actually Eli to me is like, you know, 13, 14, 15, like right there. Ryan Tannehill, I won't insult Eli Manning by putting Ryan Tannehill in the category. Ryan is like a 20, 21, 22. He can chuck the ball. He just problem deep ball. But that doesn't make him a bad quarterback. He doesn't make horrible decisions. That's something that I've known from him. It's not like he's going to go up there and put the 3, 4, 5 interception game up there. Yeah, he doesn't make decisions that. So agree with me on the point that he's a quarterback you can see movement from. That it's not someone that you should go, okay, it's time to go and look away from Ryan Tannehill.
Well, yeah. What Ryan Tannehill is, he's got a lot of natural ability, but his decision making hasn't always been on par. And he does have a lot of talent at wide receiver, a lot of good young talent at wide receiver. But again, you have to take some things off his plate. He's not the type of player who's going to be able to put the whole team on his shoulders and lead you to victory. He needs the running game. He needs the defense. He needs everything to work around him. And if you give him those things, yeah, he does have the natural ability to make plays. But again, he's not in the category of a Phillip Rivers. You know, he's not in the category of Ben Roethlisberger. He's not there yet. You know, some quarterbacks, it takes them time. It could take them, you know, 5 or 6 years, you know, before they become, you know, a real, you know, team leader that could put the team on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. He's just not there yet. He needs that help. He does have the talent, the personnel around him, but he needs the protection. He needs the running game. And it would be nice if the defense also, you know, made a stand today as well.
Hey, that voice here is a great Reverend Ralph Mancini. Follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. For me on Twitter at Jersey Ross. Let's move on to the Buffalo Bills, who are making the change at quarterback. Tyrod Taylor with the hamstring injury, I believe. So it looks like E.J. Manuel to get the start for Buffalo. Same game time decision, but I'm going to put my eggs in the E.J. Manuel basket as I'll go ahead and play the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals. I've pretty much been down talking the entire season. I really don't care if they go 16-0. To be perfectly honest, I'm not going to expect a damn thing from them until I see them win a playoff game. Okay, so they, in my opinion, they can literally go 16-0, and I will probably still predict them to lose the first playoff game. I don't care who they play, but I know the conversation is about the Buffalo Bills, so as I probably stab and run there at Bengals, I know they can't wait to go 6, 7, 8, and give it to me. Let's talk about the Buffalo Bills and their change at quarterback, and Sammy Watkins opening up and saying he wants more targets. What are you thinking about that one?
Hey, you know what? I don't blame the kid, man. I mean, he was a first-round pick. They traded up to get him. So So when you've done all of that and you're expressed your desire to have this player in your offense, you have to – all he's asking for is 10 targets a game, okay?
Yeah.
So if you're a number one wideout who was a first-round pick, I think that's a reasonable thing to ask for 10 targets a game. And he's not even getting that. So, yeah. You know, kudos to him, you know, for showing some aggressiveness there and demanding the ball, you know. As far as A.J. Manuel goes, man, you know, you take a look at this guy, you know, in terms of his size and his athletic ability, and he gives you everything you're looking for, you know, in terms of those two things.
Uh-huh.
However, it takes more than that. It takes more than size and physical ability and athletic ability to be a top quarterback or to even be a good starting quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
And he hasn't shown that. He hasn't shown that up to now. He's just been very hesitant. He's lacked confidence. Doesn't show a lot of accuracy out there. And that's the one thing that Tyrod Taylor has. You know, maybe Tyrod Taylor may not be as big and may not have the arm of an E.J. Manuel, but Tyrod Taylor is just a baller, man. I mean, he's fearless out there. You know, when he sees an opportunity, he'll go there. He'll make plays with his legs. And he's, you know, in a lot of aspects, you know, he's carried that offense a lot of times, you know, in the early part of the season. He's made plays. E.J. Manuel, I don't see that with him. He doesn't have that moxie. He doesn't have the instincts. He doesn't have the confidence in him. Will he show that today? Who knows, man. It's a tough matchup for him. Man, you know, he's a good kid coming out of Florida State. You know, I like him. You hear him talk. He sounds like a good guy. But until he shows me anything, I'm not going to expect anything out of E.J. Manuel. If the Bills want to win this game, they're going to have to step up on defense, and they're going to have to run the ball because I don't see E.J. Manuel as the type of guy that's going to go up against Cincinnati and put up, you know, 300 yards and two or three touchdowns. I just don't see that at this point.
Cincinnati Bengals having themselves one of the strongest defensive fronts in all of football, not even needing to stack the line of scrimmage in order to bring pressure to opposing quarterbacks. So they're not even going to have to you know, go ahead and stack the box with eight, nine players. They can bring six and seven and make it a hard time for anybody trying to run the rock for the Buffalo Bills and also for E.J. Manuel back there. So Sammy Watkins is going to see a defender and sometimes two on him. And you know, E.J. Manuel is going to have a little bit of pressure today trying to defeat the undefeated Cincinnati Bengals. Bringing it to another undefeated team, Ralph, hey, man. Those New England Patriots, they've looked good through the first 4 weeks. They were able to go in and really, really, really expose the Cowboys. So your thoughts on how good this Patriots team can be? I mean, are we all just kind of, you know, going through the motions until we get to a New England, Denver Broncos, AFC championship game? I mean, is that what we're all doing here?
Well, I'm not still 100% sure about the Broncos, but
okay.
I'm with you.
Number one defense.
On the Patriots.
Number one defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the Patriots is, you know, their defense is not quite there in terms of being a shutdown defense, and they're going to have
right.
some key injuries today. Dante Hightower is out. They just placed Terrell Brown, one of their cornerbacks, on IR. So it should be interesting to see what they do, you know, in terms of, you know, replacing those two players. But overall, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, you know, I mentioned many times how this team is just a machine. And, you know, we always talk about Tom Brady and Gronkowski all the time. But, you know, another player who just, like, brings it every week is Julian Edelman. And
right.
I think if Indianapolis – if they have a prayer in this game, they're going to have to stop Julian Edelman. I mean, this guy, each and every week, he's getting a ton of targets. He's making plays. And so I think, you know, what the Colts need to do is they need to put Vontae Davis on him and just hope to shut him down or contain him with their best player, with their best cornerback on him. And I think it's going to be, quite frankly, I think this game could be a very high-scoring game. Andrew Luck is coming back for the Colts. And as I mentioned before, the Patriots are a little banged up in the secondary. And, you know, and the teams have been able to run the ball on the Patriots. So I could see Frank Gore also getting his share of carries and doing some work there, doing some damage on that front. So, but at the end of the day, you know, the Patriots have too many weapons on offense, not to mention their 1-2 punch at running back with LeGarrette Blount and Deion Lewis. So, yeah, it's the Indianapolis Colts are going to have a tough time. And as far as that game goes, again, I do see both teams putting up a lot of points, but the Patriots are going to come out victorious in the end. I mean, look. Look at the past 6 years. I mean, I think the record is Indianapolis has gone 6-0 against the Colts. So, yeah, I like the Patriots once again to come up with a win today.
I mean, can you believe that? I mean, that would be them with 5 wins and counting before Halloween. The New England Patriots well on their way to putting some distance between them and a lot of the other competitors in the AFC East. Great analysis on Julian Edelman. The guy has been a rock for Tom Brady pretty much. And you wondered when the Patriots, you know, allowed a guy like Wes Welker to leave. You go, wait, why do you let somebody who's basically been Tom Brady's right-hand man walk away? Well, Julian Edelman picking up clearly where Wes Welker has left off, and also you know getting some tosses out there to Amendola as well. So Patriots showing you know, a little bit of diversity on offense. Your point exactly. They can run the ball. They can pass the ball. Injuries on defense. We'll see what they're able to do. Hey, you know, I was actually talking to my brother, and I know he said that if I brought this up, this would be just like, you know, commercial radio, and I've crossed over if I make any commentary. So this, but how can you not? Okay, so I'm gonna do it anyway. So sorry, bro. Okay, Colts win the last two games with Matt Hasselbeck at quarterback, right? Okay,
yeah,
Colts go out there. Patriots are doing their thing, you know, not really dominating, but dominating because Andrew Luck, coming off of injury, goes out there and throws 1, 2, 3 interceptions. Interceptions will take for Andrew Luck to quote unquote re-injure his shoulder or pull from. How many interceptions, or do you think not, or have a score?
I'm sorry, what was the question again?
The question is, how many interceptions will Matt Hasselbeck have to throw? I mean, will Andrew Luck have to throw in order for Matt Hasselbeck to be inserted into the lineup today, or is that not even a question?
Wow. You know, I don't know, man. I mean, that's kind of crazy. That's kind of crazy the way Hasselbeck came in there and kind of like turned back the clock. I did not see that. You know, I was watching the Colts during the preseason, and Matt Hasselbeck looked like a guy who was, you know, 45, 46 years old. I'm joking because the guy's only 40, but it was amazing to me how he came in and just ran the offense, made good, accurate throws, got everybody involved.
Decisions.
Oh, man, it's crazy.
He didn't try to take what the defense wasn't giving him. I mean, he was making it didn't look like – I mean, they dialed it down a little bit. He wasn't attacking downfield because he didn't have the downfield arm. So he wasn't making those throws that will get Andrew Luck in trouble. So that's what I'm saying. How many, you know, first, second quarter – if it's the second quarter and Andrew Luck's already thrown 3 interceptions, how as a head coach, do you not consider putting in Hasselbeck? I just don't see how it's not a conversation.
Yeah, you know what? That might be a consideration, but that's only a short-term fix. Just because Matt Hasselbeck, look, over the long term, he's not going to deliver for you. A lot of backup quarterbacks, even the good ones, you know, they'll come in for a few games and do well. But I can't see him, you know, staining this for an entire season. You know, a quarterback takes a lot of punishment. And for him to go out week in and week out and perform like that, it takes a lot. So look, as far as this game is concerned, against a very tough opponent,
right?
Maybe if the game gets out of hand, yeah, I could see them putting Hasselbeck in for this game. But for the entire season,
no.
Andrew Luck has to be the guy.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking about the entire season. There's no way. Andrew Luck has to get it together, but I'm just thinking that, hey, you know what? You get him out of that game, you say, hey, look, you know, maybe the shoulder isn't back all the way. Maybe we do need to give, Andrew Luck 2 and 3 more games off. You give him a few games off to get that shoulder right because, you know, some reports had it to where, you know, it was a serious injury and you know, the Colts are just letting him rehab kind of to get himself right. If it is a serious injury, you do have to consider Matt Hasselbeck for the rest of the season, no matter how everything you just said.
And listen, I hear you. And the thing with Andrew Luck is he has that, you know, over-the-top motion, which could put, you know, more could cause more damage to that shoulder, especially to the labral area. As far as I was reading up on that particular injury that he has. So yeah, you do want to be careful. And yeah, definitely if he's going to take a lot of hits today.
Which he always does behind that offensive line. Mm-hmm. All right, getting contacted in the middle of that motion is not going to be a good thing for that shoulder. We all know Andrew Luck, of the past couple of seasons, you know, he's been able to put up good offensive numbers, but we've also seen him taking hit after hit after hit. So no one says him going back there, he's going to, you know, have a clean game back there. No one says Matt going back is going to have a clean game. But you don't want to throw someone back there who already has, you know, kind of a tender shoulder and puts himself with every throw in a position to injure that shoulder with a defender contacting him, landing on him, etc. Green and White Show, Joe Spas here, Reverend Ralph there. Reverend Ralph joining us here on the program doing the rest report as well. Don't forget you can follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. Hey, Rev, let's get a little Jets convo in. We got you. Sheldon Richardson rejoins that perfect swarm. You got a key member of the defensive line back. You know, we haven't heard a whole lot about Mo Wilkerson's contract, discussions or anything like that. They're going to really keep that until the end of the season. It hasn't been an issue with his play on the field, still dominating. Rookie Leonard Williams doesn't look like a rookie. Actually reminds you of Richardson's rookie year, where it looks like he just walks off a college field, walks onto a pro field, and he doesn't lose a step. He's able to definitely disengage with offensive linemen, and he finds himself being a presence each and every game in the opponent's backfield. So with the addition of Sheldon Richardson to the Jets lineup, I just see bigger and better things from that perfect swarm defense. What do you see from the Jets defense coming into today's game against the Redskins?
Well, I see, obviously, the Jets' defense is loaded. They're well-rested. And on the other side of the ball against the Redskins, I see a quarterback in Kirk Cousins who's very limited, who doesn't have much of an arm. And he is going to be without his his best downfield weapon in terms of wide receivers in DeSean Jackson. Looks like he's not going to play today.
Exactly.
So you take him out of the equation and I don't know. I mean, I don't see the Redskins doing much of anything on offense. Mm-hmm. They have tried to establish the running game, but outside of their first two games, the Redskins haven't been that strong in terms of establishing the run. And I think defenses know that. They're like, okay, listen, we're going to suit up against the run. We're going to make Kirk Cousins beat us, make those throws downfield. And, quite frankly, I saw him about a few weeks ago struggle against the Giants right here in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And the Giants are nowhere near the Jets, you know, when you're talking about defense. So I can't see Kirk Cousins doing anything against the Jets defense. The Jets are just too much in terms of numbers, personnel. You mentioned Sheldon Richardson coming back. The secondary is healthy. Man, it could get ugly out there for the Redskins offense today.
That's exactly what I thought, my man. I can't see a way other than the Jets completely imploding and becoming a turnover machine that the Redskins are able to take on or take out the New York Jets today. Just too strong on defense. Their secondary is going to bottle up Kirk Cousins. Anything he tries to do passing the ball, if he even gets it off with that perfect swarm coming in and just being as aggressive as they have been in their first four games of the season. Redskins not looking good as they're going to take on the New York Jets. I want to get some NFL convo in with you, Ralph, if I could. Hey, Steelers play their first game with Mike Vick, and you know he looked decent. All right, Mike Vick looks like he can. This looks like the best team he's ever played with, to be honest. I bet you he wishes it was 10 years ago. ago or something in terms of his legs, because wow, what he could do with an offense like this around him, that's an unbelievable force. But yeah, we'll see what Mike Vick and the Steelers can do. I've always got, you know, with that potent batch of offensive weapons, I always look for the Steelers to go far. But they look to be able to score a lot of points, but now, you know, with some losses on defense, it just looks like they're going to have to score those points to win as opposed to blow teams out. So quick analysis on the Pittsburgh Steelers before we move on to the Denver Broncos again.
Well, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, with Mike Vick in there, they're not the same team. They're not the same offense. They're not as prolific, obviously. And, you know, their playmakers are not seeing the ball as much. In particular, Antonio Brown. Last game against San Diego, only had 3 catches. Now, look, you could give San Diego's defense credit for shutting Antonio Brown down for most of the game. But Mike Vick, if you're going to ask him to throw the ball 40 to 45 times, I don't see him, you know, having the ability to do that and being successful. Look, the athletic ability is still there, and the arm strength is still there. But if you're going to ask him to drop back 45 times, scan the field, and read the defense like Ben Roethlisberger does, I don't see him doing that. So they're going to have to lean on Le'Veon Bell a lot, right, early and often, a lot of short passes. Le'Veon Bell in the running game is going to have to, you know, get his 25 carries or more, you know, and mix in a little D'Angelo Williams as well. But that's the way they're going to have to win the game. But unfortunately, you know, they go up against Arizona today, and they might not have the opportunity to do that because Arizona's got a very potent offense. And so we might have to see Mike Vick, you know, go back and throw the ball a little bit more than, you know, that coaching staff wants today. So it's going to be a very, very tough game for Pittsburgh.
Yes, I can see that as well. It's going to be a tough one for them because, number one, you know what, skip the Broncos. Let's go to the Cardinals, as I wanted to ask you a question about the Seahawks and the Cardinals. I was wondering if the Seahawks could even catch the Arizona Cardinals, but they look like, I mean, they look not just dominant on defense, but they've gotten it together offensively. Carson Palmer enjoying a good early season. It's kind of the same early season he enjoyed last season until his injury. So the Arizona Cardinals, yay or nay for a team that you see winning 10-plus games and being a dominant force in this year's NFL?
Well, I would say yay for the Arizona Cardinals as long as Carson Palmer stays healthy.
Exactly.
If he stays healthy, he plays 16 games, he's healthy going into the playoffs, I see this team being one of the top contenders in the NFC. There's no doubt about it. As far as the Seahawks go, I mean, look, I'll put it to you this way. How do you make a trade for Jimmy Graham and this guy's seeing like 5 targets a game? I mean,
Daryl Bevel.
I mean, what the heck are you doing, man? I mean, you got a prime talent out there in Jimmy Graham, and you're not utilizing him at all. So I just don't get what that offense is doing. And again, you know, once again, each and every year, they're just overly dependent on Marshawn Lynch. So I like the Cardinals better as an overall team right now.
Yeah, they're definitely dominating in the NFC West there with the 49ers looking how they looked against the New York Giants and the Seahawks. You know, not looking great or putting up numbers at all like you think they would with the talent like Graham on the field. Completely agree with you. He's a guy who should see the football more. And I really thought that when they made that move that Russell Wilson was going to have himself the perfect security blanket. But it doesn't seem to be, you know, what the Seahawks are doing on offense. Agree with you completely there. They've got to make moves there. Enjoying the time with my man, Reverend Ralph. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph, my man. Appreciate you spending overtime with us, a little extended time to talk AFC East and a little NFL. Much appreciated, my man. Catch you next week as always, and enjoy your football Sunday.
Always a good time, man. Thank you.
All right. That was the great Reverend Ralph Mancini joining us on the program. Coming up soon, after a real quick Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout, will be the man, the myth, the legend. Yes, he loves the superlatives. Our man Brian Benway will join us to co-host the last half hour of the show. We hit the top of the hour for you. It's the Green and White Show. Joseph Park here, Amiri Tulik, usually there, definitely here in spirit as well. Follow us on Twitter. Follow him at Amiri Tulik on Twitter. Follow myself at Jersey Hawk on Twitter. Now, getting back to the show. I can't wait to get this man on. Okay, so nothing but MLB postseason playoffs. Even though both teams are out, we're going to have some college football talk. And he's always got a crazy thing or two to say. So we're going to welcome the great Brian Benway on the program. Brian, my man, how the hell are you doing?
What's up, man? Hey, where's Amiri? Is he at a Taylor Swift concert or something?
Oh, wow. Oh, he's going to get you for that one.
Oh, wow. Well, you know great that if you weren't here and Amiri was here, I would probably say something very similar. So if you're not on the show and Amiri's on the show, you better watch out too.
I know. Without a doubt. Like I said, folks, he didn't even wait for me to get the introduction out. Like I said, folks, the great Brian Benway with us on the show. Follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not with an I. Hey, man, you've been busy this weekend. Real busy. I noticed. So tell me a little bit about what the weekend is before we get into this. Until we get into this Sports Sunday.
Man, I'm always busy, and I like to keep busy because it keeps me out of trouble sometimes. So I do football games in San Antonio on ESPN San Antonio, and we get to watch a lot of the best high school football here in Texas. There are usually one or two San Antonio football teams that go really deep in the state playoffs here. So that was on Thursday night. Last night I had an event, actually all day yesterday, I had an event on campus at Shriner University where I also work as well. And then Friday night we had an event as well in San Antonio. So it's been one of those weeks where there's not a lot of downtime, which is good, but I enjoy it. But, of course, I watched all the baseball, watched a lot of football when I got home yesterday. So I'm raring to go. You can never watch enough sports when you're busy like that. And one of the best things that I like about staying busy, whether it's broadcasting or whether it's doing speaking in to groups of folks that I do, there's always time to wind down watching sports, and there was a ton of that this week, so I'm pretty pumped up to talk about it today.
There's so many different places to start, but there's no better place to start than where one game finished, and I'm talking about what happened to Michigan. And that loss, 27-23 to Michigan State, I'm sure if you didn't catch it live, you had to have seen at least one of the 10,000 replays that I've seen of that moment since it happened. I still can't believe it happened. Michigan dropping back, perfect use of the 10 seconds left. Michigan getting ready to punt the football away to Michigan State. And what happened?
That was one of the worst endings for a team that I have ever seen. I was trying to think of this last night when I saw the end of that football game. What were some of the worst ways that I've seen that a team has lost? And I couldn't think of a whole lot, to be honest with you. That's one of those situations. I saw a stat that at the time that they were punting the football, the probability for Michigan to lose that game was 0.02%. 0.02%. And then they lose the game on one of the craziest endings that I've seen in a football game. And you have to feel bad for the Michigan punter. He's actually one of the best punters in the country. He's one of the best people on that Michigan team. Whenever you see him come out onto the field, you know that that's a bonus for Michigan most of the time. I mean, the dude is a very solid punter. And that's one of those mistakes. Yeah, that's one of those mistakes that is going to follow him around for a long time, especially with that rabid fan base in Michigan. But I will tell you this. No, a lot of things bring me joy in life, but one of the things that brings me joy in life is when Jim Harbaugh loses football games. I am not a Jim Harbaugh fan. I never have been a Jim Harbaugh fan, and it's great when he loses football. Can you imagine how upset he was last night at home? He probably hasn't slept at all. He's probably paced. He's probably yelling at his dog. He's probably yelling at his cats. It's fantastic. But I'll go back to say this. Can you remember, Haas, a time where a team has lost a game at the last second that it was as crazy and as random as what we saw in that game yesterday?
No, not too many. Well, actually, you know what? I can think of a couple games coming to my mind, and because they, you struck a chord with me, my man. I'm a 49ers fan, so you know I had to have love for Jim Harbaugh. And if I didn't go to Rutgers, it was Michigan I was going to. So I'm a huge Michigan fan, and I'm a huge Jim Harbaugh fan. So a couple games stick out to me in terms of crazy endings. How about that?
The playoff game?
The playoff game, 49ers-Giants.
In
San Francisco. I was at that game. Unbelievable.
You were? Wow.
Yeah. I lived out in San Francisco for a while, so I was at that game. And then, of course, I was at the two games that the Oakland Raiders ended up playing before they went to the Super Bowl season for the Bay Area. So that game I remember with a crazy ending. And another game, we won't call it a crazy ending, but one that hurt close because I really wanted to see any team beat the New York Giants. The Buffalo Bills losing Scott Norwood wide.
That was 1991. You're going in the way back time machine today.
I'm hitting the way back machine to way back. So, yeah, as a little kid, I remember seeing that. So there were some harsh endings there, but nothing. I mean, you don't even know how I felt. Like, I was sitting there loving the fact that Harbaugh was going to win his first game against Michigan State. They are the rival, okay? I love this as a green and white show, but Michigan State is the rival. They are green and white as well. So they are the rival. And I was Desmond Howard was throwing the thumbs up, and poor guys were crushed on Twitter all night. I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. And Punter, who I was going to tweet, and for some reason I had forgotten to tweet it, but I was going to tweet that the punter should be the MVP of the game because of how he was able to pin Michigan State inside the 10, inside the 5 repeatedly. He got an 80-yard punt during that game, in the beginning of the game, to actually change the flow of the game and put it back in Michigan's favor. He was actually the MVP of the game until that moment. Okay, so one of the things they got to start teaching the Aussie kickers in this kicking academy is, okay, you got to get down. If something happens, just hold on to the ball and get down. They got to teach him that because he obviously tried to kick the ball but didn't realize what was going to happen if he, you know, didn't. And it was a turnover.
It's still crazy.
I still don't believe I saw it, but I guess I did. I know something else I don't believe I saw that I know I did. I saw the next great running back who's going to be playing. He's still Saturdays now, and that's Leonard Fournette for LSU. LSU beating Florida last night, 35-28. But Leonard Fournette is a beast. The man. He's a young guy. He's not even eligible. He runs over people. I don't know if you get to watch LSU football at all, or if you know how close Leonard Fournette is to the Heisman. I mean, come on, 5 games to get to 1,000 yards in college football, averaging, 200 plus. I mean, the guy has been a beast, and it's not like men against boys, but he's dragging people. He knows how to fall forward for 2 to 3 to 5 yards. The guy's amazing. So he's definitely getting my vote for the Heisman. I don't see anybody coming close. One of these quarterbacks is going to have one of these outstanding stat seasons for me to even consider him.
A couple of things that come to my mind when I watch Fournette run the football. The first thing is that he looks a lot like Bo Jackson when he's running. Remember back in the day when Bo would just run dudes over? Bo would just wreck people. That's the first thing that I think of. And the second thing I think of is it looks like he has all the cheat codes when he's playing Madden. That's what it looks like. It looks like he has all the cheat codes and that no one's going to beat him because it does. Or it looks like maybe your uncle, he's like 25 years old and he's playing football in the backyard with a bunch of 13-year-old kids, and the uncle has the football and he's running over him. He's like your 25-year-old uncle playing tackle football in the backyard with a bunch of 12-year-old kids and the uncle stiff-arming kids in the backyard. That's what it looks like. The dude is so strong. He's so quick. He's so powerful. He's fun to watch. And I'll tell you what, this LSU football team having another great year. I'm not the biggest Les Miles fan, but you've got to hand it to him. He brings in talent. He brings in guys and plugs in gaps every year when they lose a lot of guys in key spots. So you have to give him credit, but you look at Fournette run. I wish I could be half as – actually, I take that back. I wish I could be 1/100th as athletic and big as Fournette, or I'll try to have some sort of decent career, you know, in the XFL back in the day or something like that, you know?
That one-year wonder. Running through some college, some other college football games, especially for me, Rutgers getting that late win over Indiana. You got Iowa smashing Northwestern. That final was 40-10. You got Florida State taking out Louisville and keeping the ball rolling there. Alabama taking out Texas A&M. You got South Carolina, new coach. They take out Vanderbilt on the road, too. Not bad. 16-10 for the Gamecocks. Oklahoma smashing Kansas State 55-0. Who could do that? And of course, which was, I mean, you call it an upset because of how Ole Miss has been playing lately, but it didn't look like it, you know, on the football field as Memphis took out Ole Miss 37-24, just to round out some of the college scores. As well, let's not forget Baylor. Baylor putting up nearly a 60-burger on West Virginia. So Baylor, I mean, you're wondering about these top teams. You've got the Baylors, you've got the Utahs of the world fighting up there with the Ohio States. Ohio State looking real good yesterday, and now a little conversation about the Ohio State quarterback situation. I don't know how Cardale Jones ever gets, you know, back on the football with the way JT Barrett played last night. So I know whose you know, basket I got my eggs in as Ohio State quarterback. Did you catch any of Ohio State running up and down the football field? A little televised scrimmage last night?
Didn't catch a lot of that game. I saw the early portion of it, where Penn State was actually winning 3-0, and then Ohio State turned the Jets on. And this is another team where I'm not a big Urban Meyer fan at all. I haven't really been, but he always finds a way to plug in gaps as well. Their defense is so good at Ohio State. That's why they're number one in the country. And I've actually seen a couple of people that have been pretty vocal, not only on Twitter, but on some talk shows, saying that they don't believe Ohio State is the number one team in the country.
Yeah,
you know, I posted to you.
Hey, I agreed with them. I agreed with them until I saw
you
them.
You do? Okay.
I did. Until
yeah,
last
okay.
Time.
So now you think they are the number one team, which I ask you then, if they're not, if Ohio State's not the number one team, who is? You can't say it's Baylor. Their defense is so terrible.
No,
you can't
no.
say it's TCU. Same thing for them. So
right.
It has to be not Ohio either. State.
Yeah, it kind of has to be because of the kind of level of competition they play and the conference they play in. You've got to consider them just a little bit more than you consider the others because you're just not seeing them play a caliber of competition like, you know, an Ohio State will play week in and week out. You know, some may not consider Rutgers a caliber of competition, you know, coming up, but they play week in and week out, and you'll see how they end the season as well, playing teams like Michigan State and Michigan, and you see teams like that out there, and you have to give Ohio State their credit as number one, especially when they can put together a performance. They've got the athletes. They've got the coaching. Basically, all they need to do is play the games, and we'll be watching them in the new year, without a doubt. I mean, I agree with completely Ohio State being one of the number one team, of course, the number one team in the nation. How about a number one team in women's hoops? I mean, WNBA, do you think they've got themselves a mini dynasty in the Minnesota Lynx? Yeah, I know. I took it all the way there. Okay, third championship in 5 years, team being led by great college players like Maya Moore, Lindsey Whalen. So I just want to ask you because, you know, three championships in 5 years, that's not bad, especially in today's sports where it's so transient, where players, you know, go from team to team, free agency. There's just a dearth of talent out there. You win three championships in 5 years in a sport. You got to be considered a mini dynasty. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree with that. However, I will say this. I didn't know the WNBA still existed, to be completely honest with you. I am not I don't watch the WNBA. I'm not a fan of it. However, I will tell you this. If you win three titles in 4 years, three titles in 5 years, any sport, any league, any level, that's one heck of a dynasty. I'm with you there. Going back to when the Patriots won three Super Bowls in 4 years. You know, the Cowboys won back-to-back. You've got Ohio State in football maybe working on a dynasty. Of course, you've got those great Laker teams. And I'll go back in WNBA history for you. Actually, you probably wouldn't think I would even bring this part up. But remember way back, the Houston Comets won the first four WNBA championships. You didn't think I was going to go anywhere near that, did you?
Not at all, man. You definitely pulled out. You pulled that one out of the hat. You pulled that rabbit way out of the hat. I'm like, oh wow.
Yep.
Okay.
They won the first four WNBA championships, and then you had the New York Liberty, who I think had a little bit of a streak there early on in that year as well, or that time frame. I think when Rebecca Lobo was playing for them. There's a name drop for you, right?
Yeah.
And you look at this
I'm
team.
I'm racking up the points here. I'm scoring you right here.
And,
you're scoring points.
And you look at that WNBA team now with the length in Minnesota, and really great for Minnesota because they really don't have a lot of good pro teams anymore. It seems the Timberwolves have been terrible for a while. They have. The Twins, yeah, they almost made the playoffs, but prior to that, they've had a down streak. So now you've got the Lynx. Good for them. Good for the ladies. The ladies work hard. And I've played pickup games with some really good college players that are female back in the day. And I'll tell you what, I would not want to go back and play against them. Because if you think men players are kind of dirty, you know, as far as throwing elbows and stuff, females know how to throw those undetectable elbows down low. Why do you think females always win arguments against men? Because they know the sneaky ways on how to win these arguments, and they know the sneaky ways on how to win games and how to throw elbows and how to do all that stuff without getting caught. So the WNBA players, they're tough, they're gritty, and I'm happy for the Minnesota Lynx. Three titles in 4 years, like you said. They are a dynasty. I'm not much of a WNBA fan, but I'm with you on that point, that if you're going to win three titles in 4 or 5 years, then you have yourselves a pretty darn good franchise going on.
I hear you there. Me hanging around the athletic department at Rutgers, used to see a lot of Alicia Sealer and Tammy Button Brown, some All-American girls basketball players who ended up having pretty good careers. Alicia Sealer, a good college player, and Tammy Sutton Brown definitely winning a championship with the show franchise in the WNBA. So, yeah, I agree with you completely. You're just like, wow, okay. Didn't think I was catching an elbow from there. Next thing you know, it's just as tough, just as competitive. That's why I kind of I dig the women's sports. You know, you'll catch me watching a WNBA game from time to time. You'll catch me watching the LPGA. You'll catch me watching, okay, so yeah, you'll catch me watching women's beach volleyball.
But here's where you know you're in trouble, though, Haas, okay? Where you know you're in trouble. If you ever watch a WNBA game at a bar, that's when you've hit rock bottom.
Ouch. Yeah.
So,
I'll be more concerned with the single ladies in front of me than the single ladies.
Hey, guys, let's go watch the WNBA over at Buffalo Wild Wings tonight. No, thanks, Ted. What are you talking about?
No, I don't think you're going to catch me there, though I wouldn't mind a wing. Wow, it is kind of early, but Buffalo Wild Wings. It sounds like a good idea. Little name there as well. Okay, I know you're getting sponsored now. Now, that's either way, that's the great Brian Benway. He's on the program with us, joining us for the full half hour. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not with an I. Your humble host, Joseph Haas, here. Follow me on Twitter at Jersey Haas. Mary Tillich, not with us today on the board, but with us in spirit as well. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Mary Tillich. Now, it's time. It's time. Everybody's been waiting. Are you going to talk baseball or what? Yeah, I'm going to talk some baseball. Are you kidding me? I've been waiting the entire show to talk about the New York Mets winning game one of the NLCS last night. All Matt Harvey, all Daniel Murphy, all day, 4-2 victory. Cubbies down a game already. What an outstanding, not just atmosphere, but performance by Matt Harvey. The atmosphere in Queens down in Flushing at the end of the 7 train, just awesome. It was chilly. People out there looking like it was winter, and it probably felt like it was winter. It looked like early season Twins baseball. It was just, you know, so I'm excited about the baseball season. I'm excited about them going out, just somehow taking Game 5, and I wanted to bring Game 5 of the NLDS into the conversation because of some of the talk around Don Mattingly as well. But your thoughts? Hey, I know Texas is out, Rangers and Astros both out of the postseason. First, your thoughts on Texas being out of the baseball postseason with two shots in it, and then your thoughts on those New York Mets.
Yeah, we'll start with those Texas teams. First of all, it was pretty embarrassing if you look at it. You had the Rangers, who were up 2-0. They won two road games. Then they lose the final three. They throw up a stinker in Game 5. So that's a huge embarrassment for the Texas Rangers. Then you had the Houston Astros, who, by the way, were three outs away in Game 4. So you look at them at home, they have a chance to go to the next round. They blow it there. The Royals score five runs late in the game. Then you have the Royals winning big in Game 5. That big home run in the bottom of the eighth obviously is what clinched it. And I'm upset because I was going to go to the ALCS. I had plans in place to go to one game in Houston and go to one game in Arlington. So now what am I doing? I'm not going to watch baseball, that's for sure. So I was upset about that. It's pretty embarrassing for both of those teams. Yeah, everybody's going to say, well, the Astros weren't expected to be there. You're right, they weren't. But when you have a performance in a playoff series where you choke a game away, that's going to be remembered. I don't care if you're supposed to be there or not. You have to win those types of games. So it's embarrassing for both of those Texas teams to finish the way they did. And moving forward now to the NLCS, I watched that game last night. Holy cow, what a great atmosphere that was. Woo! You were right. I felt like I was watching the Mets back in, 2001 when they made it to the World Series, 99 when they played the Braves in the playoffs, where Benny Agbayani had that big home run back in the day.
Punch, baby.
I felt like it was those types of years watching that game last night. And if you're the Chicago Cubs, and I'm going to be open with you, my second favorite team growing up because of Harry Carey were the Chicago Cubs. And so I was a huge Cubs fan, and I want to see them win. Kind of disheartened last night. But Harvey, fantastic as advertised. If he pitches like that in a couple more starts, I don't think there's anybody that could beat him. And you look at John Lester on the other side, he pitched okay. He didn't pitch spectacular. He pitched good enough for the Cubs to win. It's just Harvey was so dominant. I think that was the big matchup. And you're looking at Murphy, wow, what a postseason he's having. And the big question is going to be, where will he end up next year? I think that's big too. But if you're a Mets fan, and I have a ton of guys that I went to college with in New York who were at the game last night and who are Mets fans and who are diehard Mets fans. And so they are pumped. I've been texting with those guys for the past couple of weeks in this playoffs. And I'm pumped for Mets fans because whenever you have a team that hasn't been there in a while, that hasn't had a lot of success, it's fun to watch. So I was just yelling at the TV last night. I said, put Roland Gardner in. Where's Henry Roland Gardner? You know what I'm talking about.
Well, the Mets having nothing but success. Look, I can't wait for tonight as well. Game 2, all right, NLCS. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to have my New York Mets go ahead and not just win, but dominate another game over the Cubs. I know I can get you just a little bit because those John Harbaugh comments, those Jim Harbaugh comments from before, they still dig deep, my man. So we're going to make sure we get your guys just one more time tonight.
And you know what? With Arrieta on the mound, I think it's a foregone conclusion that the Mets win this one tonight, too. I honestly do. The Cubs offense looked anemic last night, and they had terrible base running blunders. That's one of those things that you don't see from a playoff team. And when you're going against solid starting pitching, you can't make those types of mistakes. And I love Joe Maddon as the manager, but you've got to look at this team and say, well, we've got to get ahead early tonight if you're the Cubs. You have to somehow scrape a run together in the first couple of innings, and then you have to have a solid pitching performance yourself. But I'm with you. You have Arrieta, who's pitched great, and he's going to go on the mound again tonight. It's going to be an uphill battle for the Cubs. The crowd is going to be electric because the Mets won last night. I'm pumped, though, for Game 3 back at Wrigley. I think that's going to be one of those things.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
You know, if you're a history buff, and I know you're a big baseball guy, seeing the NLCS at Wrigley Field for the first time since 2003 is going to be fantastic. A night game at Wrigley, the lights are going to be on, it's going to be fantastic. So that's one of the big things that I'm really hoping. If the Cubs ever make it to the World Series, they haven't been to the World Series since, what, 1945, I believe? So yes, you and I for sure were not born back then. my parents were not born back then. So my parents and my grandparents saw it, but 1945, it was like the Red Sox, you know, winning the World Series back in 2004. We hadn't seen that in 86 years. So someday, before I die, I want to see the Cubs play and win a World Series. I do, just because we've never seen it before.
But not this year. I'd love to see that, and I agree with you. I can't wait to see the Cubbies win, but not this year.
I get it.
Noah Syndergaard hoping to get the Mets to 2-0. He'll take the bump, even though he, you know, kind of came in and pitched in relief on Thursday. But they're saying Noah Syndergaard's going to be good to go, so he'll carry the load for the New York Mets as Harvey did last night. Mets looking to go 2-0. KC, they've just got this comeback thing going on. Come on, Toronto Blue Jays go up 3-0. Looks like in the seventh and eighth inning that the Blue Jays are going to easily win the game. And next thing you know, the Royals come out of nowhere, 6 runs to take out the Blue Jays. The Royals look like, people are talking about them being fueled from the disappointment of last season. Maybe they are, because they've come back in some games that they had no business coming back in. So, you know, they beat the Blue Jays 6-3. They go up 2-0 in the ALCS, and now they're on their way to Toronto. It looks like it's the Royals' time. They look like they want to make it. They're 2 games away from making it to the World Series. Can anybody stop the Royals? I mean, Joey Bats can flip as many bats as he wants, but, they're down 2-0 right now in the series.
By the way, greatest bat flip of our generation from Bautista.
Yeah.
I wish I could do that every day. Like, you know, when you walk into a room and you have, something great to say, don't you wish you could just have one of those baseball bats and just when you make a point, just flip it? I mean, that was fantastic. Of course, you know me. I'm not humble as much as you are. You know, I love, you know, to be theatrical. So if I would do just that thing. But on to the Royals. They seem to be unstoppable. You're right. And they come in those last 2 games against the Astros. That's where it really started. You have that 5-run inning late in Game 4 in Houston, and then they carry it over to Game 5. So they've won 4 straight games in the playoffs, scoring 6 last night. And I thought Toronto was going to take this series. They still might, because let's remember, the last series against the Rangers, Blue Jays were down 2-0, won that series. Now, they did have home field in that last series, so it'll be interesting to see what happens when we go to Toronto for Games 3, 4, and 5, if there is a Game 5, looking at the way the Royals are playing. But I like to watch this Royals team. They're fun. They're entertaining.
Yeah.
They're young, and they have fun in the dugout. They're a good – when you look at all these teams that are still in it, actually, all these teams are young, they're exciting, and they all have a lot of fun. But looking at the Royals – and by the way, I've been to Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City –
really?
Five or six years ago, and that's when they kind of were still struggling, so there was nobody there. And the cool thing is, looking at that stadium now, the last couple of years when they made it to those World Series, looking at them, looking at the fan base there.
I didn't even recognize it.
Chiefs have been struggling for a while, Chiefs have been struggling for a bit. So in Kansas City, I had a lot of fun. In Kansas, actually, I've had a lot of fun in every city I've ever been in, so I can kind of say that. But a big fan of Kansas City as far as the atmosphere of that city goes. So I'm happy for those. I've actually, believe it or not, a couple of college friends that I went to school with in New York that are Kansas City Royals fans. I don't know how that happened, but they're Royals fans. But they're fun to watch, and I don't know if they're going to sweep Toronto. I hope they don't. I hope that the Blue Jays make that a series. But so far, they're looking unstoppable through the first 2 games.
Unstoppable on the microphone, as always, the great Brian Brenway. Yeah, the magnificent, the superlatives, I rain them on him. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, @BrianBenway. That is with a Y, not with an I. live, folks. Joining us a little overtime, coming to help host out the second half of the show. Man, I totally appreciate you. Let me get some news in before we wrap up the show. Lamar Odom getting better after being on life support. That whole story is crazy. And then, of course, Scott Van Pelt getting on the mic and doing what he does with a great opinion about Lamar Odom as well. LeBron James back in. So we'll see. He's going to be out for the rest of the preseason. We'll see how we'll see how things work out with him. We always look to see him in the NBA Finals. It just seems to be like one of those things. There's an NBA season, there's an NBA Finals, and LeBron James is in it. It's just one of those things. One of those things that we always enjoy is getting our man Brian Benway on the show with us again. Like I said, follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. That is with a Y, not with an I. Brian, awesome job today, pinch hitting, hitting them out of the park. You were awesome, my man.
I had a blast. Best 30 minutes of my day for sure. Have a good Sunday.
Thank you. You do the same. Like I said, the great Brian Benway joining us on the program. As always, we'll catch him again next week. We'll catch you again next week. It won't just be me. It'll be me and my man, Amiri Tillich, co-hosting. Thank you for joining us here on the Green and White Show. As I always say, it's God bless. Go Jets, turn us up, and take us home.
Diversity Music Group. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Woo! Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color.
Another great
insane,
show.
Fitted to love the restored
so
butter.
Like I said, I'm
color
so
up, my dollars up. I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sin and I'm resisting to success. Blessed, young, gifted, the bar's been lofted. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares? I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree. I am
Success, young, fresh, fresh. Toast to the day I rest. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing all my life with you. Success, young, fresh, fresh. Toast to the day I rest. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing all my life with you. Watch off money when I make it. Whatever's not given, I'ma take it. Cutties need to take it. This business is cutthroat. Box cutter, so I don't get boxed under. Success brings jealousy and envy, so hopefully they forgive me for enjoying the hate. It's just I'm caught in the moment. Let me catch the feeling. Sky's the limit, so what the fuck is the ceiling? After my first million, I'm gunning 100+. Incorporated us, real estate and fashion. My passion, love, and hip-hop brought me a long way from the days I pitched rope. The clean-up man did my clean duff. Took that dirty money and gave it a clean cut. Ain't an avenue these feet ain't touch. How I rise in the clutch, hit my knee and got right back up.
Success, young, fresh, fresh. Toast to the day y'all fresh.
Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing, brought my life to you.
Success, young, fresh, fresh.
Toast to the day y'all fresh.
Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue.
Dream chasing, brought my life to you.
No lights, I illuminate the room. It's up to y'all to consume. I left it in pure form. Standard empires prepared for King Kong. King Great Alexander, no wait. I'm in another mind state, so it's ace of fate.